Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of A Really Good Podcast with Greg and Liz. And today's episode is what some might call my Roman Empire.
Yeah, this has been your thing for a while now.
Yeah, I've been talking about this for a while. I've been really excited to do an episode on this.
So there's a few things that stuck out for me. One article I read said one member of this band snorted 7 miles of cocaine.
Oh, I believe that.
Did you hear that?
And I didn't hear that, but I believe that.
There's a couple members of this band whose voices you would certainly recognize in the We Are the World video. They're not in it, but what I'm saying is they have distinctive voices. Yeah.
What I'm going. Like they could have been in the We Are the World video. Right. Yes.
So,
yes.
A band that, as a person who's, I don't know, I'm kind of a classic rock guy, I guess you would say. I'm a dad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I wear a backwards hat. I have a smoker. So I'm in that wheelhouse. But Fleetwood Mac really never caught my eye. But I have to admit, starting with the song that you sent me, which I know the song, but the video and like the
Silver
performance.
Springs.
Yes, I was.
Oh my God.
Enchanted.
I can't wait to talk about Silver Springs. That right there is my Roman Empire. Like, not right. Fleetwood Mac as a whole. That video of the two of them just like burning holes in each other's eyes, glaring at each other. And like, there's so much hatred mixed with love and passion in this.
Very, very thin line between love and hate, as we
It is.
Very Shakespearean. Well, this is like a Shakespearean tragedy.
It's part Shakespearean, part Scandoval.
yeah. And you know what's funny is like that video that you sent me, it's like she's older. And I kept thinking of watching these Babe Ruth movies as a kid. And it's like this old Babe Ruth and everyone's like, you're washed up. And he just one more time, one more home run. And
yeah.
And this is, I think this was this for her. And it was like, wow, she is still got it.
Yeah. And there's actually a lot more that goes into the whole lore of Silver Springs. So,
well, of course, we're talking about Fleetwood Mac, Stevie Nicks, right? You know,
I know.
Lindsay
they know.
Buckingham, who I was always like, oh, I didn't know there was three female members of this band. Lindsay Buckingham is actually a man.
Yeah. I actually was thinking how it's kind of funny that it's Stevie and Lindsay, but switched.
You could really screw that up in your head.
Yeah. It could be a little confusing, you know? All right. So I have a lot of notes here. I'm not sure if this is going to end up being an extended episode, but we are going to get into it. All right. So Fleetwood Mac formed in July 1967 in London, England by Peter Green. Now, Peter Green had previously been in Shotgun Express with a young Rod Stewart as a vocalist. Mm-hmm. One of the themes that's going to happen throughout this is there are so many other stars and rock stars and musicians that they end up interacting with. So we're going to kind of weave that in through it as we're talking about all this. So at the time, Peter Green was a member of John Mayall and the Blues Breakers. He actually replaced Eric Clapton in the band.
Huge name. Another huge name, right? There's a lot of lore there. And I won't keep interrupting you, but I was intrigued and I actually did a deep dive on this Peter Green guy. Very interesting person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome voice. Very good looking.
I don't think I know any of his voice because he kind of got out of Fleetwood Mac before.
Very
really
just bluesy. Oh, if you listen to some Peter Green, like really, really early Fleetwood Mac, awesome voice, kind of an awesome character, goes off the deep end on some LSD bender.
All right. Hold on. Like, relax. Okay. Relax.
All right.
I'm going to talk about it.
I'm sorry. We're going to get to that. All right. Okay. Of course you are.
Of course I am. So at the time, the band consisted of Peter Green, John Mayall, Mick Fleetwood, and John McVie. So Mayall gave Green some free recording time as a gift, which Fleetwood, McVie, and Green used to record 5 songs. Soon after this, Green suggested to Fleetwood that they form a new band. The pair wanted McVie on the bass guitar and named the band Fleetwood Mac to entice him, but McVie actually opted to keep his steady income with Mayall rather than take a risk with a new band. So they teamed up with slide guitarist Jeremy Spencer and bassist Bob Brunning. Brunning was in the band with the understanding that he would leave if McVie decided to join. Talk about like second rate, you know?
Yeah.
They made their debut in August 1967 at the Windsor Jazz and Blues Festival, billed as Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac featuring Jeremy Spencer, which just rolls off the tongue, you know?
I know.
You're not getting on the radio with that, that's for sure. Within a few weeks of their first show, John McVie agreed to join the band as a permanent bassist and Brunning was out. So 1 month in, this is already a mess.
And if we're painting pictures of like what this looks like in this early, like late 60s, right? Mick Fleetwood looks like Rachel from Pet Sematary.
Sister.
Did you see pictures? Yeah.
He's an enormous man. He is an enormous man.
Also, they're all huge, but like rail thin.
Yep.
It's alarming.
Scary. And probably like, doesn't it make your spine curve? Or is that?
I don't think so.
Is that a myth?
Acid makes
your spine curve? No?
No. Nope.
Well, learn something new every day.
That's right.
So Fleetwood Mac's self-titled debut album was released in February 1968. The album was successful in the UK and reached number 4, but there were no singles released from it. Though they did release a few later that year, one of them being Black Magic Woman. Mm. Did you know that that was a Fleetwood Mac song?
I was going to say that was Santana.
Santana covered it.
Okay.
So their second studio album was released August 1968. So one of the big things about Fleetwood Mac is they fucking cranked these albums out.
Prolific. They're like the Stephen King of classic rock.
The second album, Mr. Wonderful, featured a horn section as well as a friend of the band, Christine Perfect of Chicken Shack, on keyboard. So Christine was a huge fan of the band and used to go see them all the time, anytime she had a night off. And after opening for them, ended up marrying John in 1968 and becoming Christine McVie, who we know to be one of the main members of the band. In 2022, she recounted the night of her wedding to John, saying, "It wasn't really a honeymoon. We got married locally, but there was, oddly enough, that famous husky voice singer, Joe Cocker. He was staying at the same hotel and he got plastered with us on our wedding night until we kicked him out." So that sounds like a good time.
I bet you there was a lot of good times, yeah.
Yeah. Shortly after the release of Mr. Wonderful, Fleetwood Mac became a five-piece with the addition of 18-year-old guitarist Danny Kirwan, a talented self-taught guitarist who had a signature vibrato and unique style that added a new dimension to the band's sound. They ended up going on tour in the U.S. in January 1969 and actually making an album, Fleetwood Mac in Chicago, with some blues legends, including Willie Dixon, Buddy Guy, and Otis Spann. These were the last all-blues recordings, with the band moving more towards a rock style. Mm-hmm. I didn't actually listen to any of their first stuff.
It's really good.
Is it?
It really is. It's really good. Yeah, that Peter Green has a really good voice.
You love Peter Green.
I do. And you know, it turns out, like, as you're obviously going to mention, it turns out I love Christy McVie too.
Yeah, Christy McVie she's got my favorites.
Yeah,
sure.
It's almost like when you hear Fleetwood Mac, you know Christy McVie really well. But for me personally, it's like, oh, I never knew that. Somehow I associated it with Stevie Nicks still.
Yeah, but I mean, they couldn't be more different sound-wise. Yeah. Because the style of the band was changing, they were also going through label changes. So they had been on the Blue Horizon label, but because they added Danny Kirwan, who was a little bit more diverse, they were no longer right for the blues-only label. The Beatles wanted the band on Apple Records because Mick Fleetwood and George Harrison were actually brothers-in-law. They were married to sisters. George Harrison was married to Patty Boyd, and Mick Fleetwood was married to Jenny Boyd. And I believe, wow. I didn't look this up, but I believe Patty Boyd, the one George Harrison was married to, ended up cheating on him with Eric Clapton, I want to say.
Yes, that's the song Something was written about her.
Yes.
And the
yes.
song Wonderful Tonight was written about her.
Imagine, you just get on
so
that
she
scene.
Must have been a looker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And her sister was like, okay. So, you know what? It's funny that you're mentioning that, and I know this is a long episode as it is, but you know, my grandfather and his brother married my grandmother and her sister. They were neighbors.
Really? I love yeah. that. I would have See, loved to
We
have
always
done
found
that.
It kind of confusing. We were like, wait a minute, your brother's married to her sister. We always, it's kind of incestual when you say it out loud.
Well,
even though it's not.
I mean, it sounds like it, but realistically, it's really not. Do you ever see the ones about the twins? Two twins married two twins.
I don't
and then
that.
Like their kids are technically siblings because of the level of DNA.
Yeah, no, forget it. Don't do that.
That's confusing.
That is very confusing.
Branch, although, I don't know, twins have a weird bond, and I feel like maybe you can only relate to certain people.
I feel like they would do, like, you know? Weird, like, switching tricks.
I don't think people do that after the age of, like, 10. Okay. So by 1969, Peter Green was using a lot of LSD. During a European tour towards the end of the year, he was invited to go to a party and they had laced the drinks with some type of poor LSD. Apparently there are grades of it. Mm-hmm. And he had a really bad acid trip. The manager of the band, Clifford Davis, singled out this incident and said it was a crucial point in his mental health decline. This actually reminded me of the scene in Almost Famous. When they go to the party and he's like, I'm a golden god, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, having a psychedelic or hallucinogenic induced psychological break, super common thing. It can induce things like dormant schizophrenia. Like this could have been the thing that pushed him into insanity, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, for lack of a better word.
He tapped into some shit.
Yeah, he was on a different planet at this point.
Yes. In April 1970, Green decided to quit the band after the completion of their European tour and played his last show with them in May 1970. The remaining four members set out to work on their next album and released Kiln House in September 1970 to generally positive reviews. Christine was not a member at this point, but she contributed singing backup vocals and playing keyboards. She was not credited with any of this, and she actually drew the album cover. And after the album was released, she was invited to join the band to help fill in with the rhythm section.
You can kind of tell that someone drew that album cover. Have you seen that album?
I didn't see that album cover. I looked up a few of them, but I didn't see that one.
And just one more thing on Peter Green, and I promise I'll let it go. You know the Friends episode where Ross keeps getting tanned? Like, he's spray tanned over and over again. Do you think that, like, he went to this party and he probably had already done so much LSD, and then he finds out the punch was spiked with more LSD? He's like, that can't be true. And then that was just it, right? He's like, there's any more LSD, he's going to put me over the top. And it's like, he's just been drinking it.
Well, I feel like that's what it's like with edibles, where it's like, people are like, I took some, it didn't work. And then they just keep taking them. And then all of a sudden, they're thinking they're a chair.
And their spine's all crooked all of a sudden.
Yeah, exactly. I know. That's the big thing. So while the band is on a U.S. tour in February of 1971, Jeremy Spencer, one of the guitarists, left to go get a magazine and never returned. After several days of frantic searching, the band discovered that Spencer had joined a religious group called the Children of God. Mm-hmm. I did a little research on it, of course. It's now called the Family International. And they kind of spread the message of salvation. I'm going to try this word. This was hard for me. Apocalypticism. Apocalypticism. It's like about the apocalypse. Spiritual revolution, happiness, and distrust of the outside world. They also began the method of flirty fishing. Have you ever heard of this?
Flirty fishing.
And this is when women would go and like seduce men. They would be like, oh, come back and let's have sex. And then they would convince them to join their cult.
Yeah, I bet you that worked quite a bit.
I was just going to say, I can't think of a more effective. It's definitely better than passing out brochures at the airport.
Yeah,
that's no for kidding. Sure.
Any charismatic leaders? Any that we wouldn't sort
no,
of know?
No, I didn't. But Jeremy Spencer is actually to this day still involved in this. So.
Well, he can't back out now. He left.
This was 50 years ago. They didn't have a guitarist, so they were liable for the remaining shows on the tour and asked Peter Green, big guy, there you are, to step in as a replacement. I love this. This is a perfect example of somebody who had a bad LSD trip and just ruined their life. So Green agreed, brought along his friend Nigel, who played the congas, and insisted on playing only new material and would refuse to play any of the songs that he had written with them. So they ended up having to do like jam band type stuff where they just like played music.
I wonder if it was awesome or terrible.
I know. Way. He seems like a real outlier.
If you look at pictures of him, he wears like this big white, almost looks like Jesus, really.
Yeah. Wait, did you like my post today about Bolton?
Beautiful. You know I love it. Perfect.
I like got to a point where I was like, should I put him next to Jesus walking on water? And I was like, yeah, I should. It feels like the right thing to do. So the summer of 1971, the band holds auditions for replacement guitarists at their large country home. And here's a tape of Bob Welch playing and decides to hire him without actually playing with him, just from the tape. I think we're starting to see a pattern of why these things are not working out. It feels like maybe this is why you're struggling. So September 1971, the band releases their fifth studio album called Future Games. Due to Welch's arrival and Spencer's departure, the album was different from anything they had done previously, moving more towards the melodic rock sound with the vocal harmonies that becomes a key part of the Fleetwood Mac sound. And away from that really blues rock style. In Europe, they released Fleetwood Mac's first greatest hits album, which is, that's aggressive.
Is so aggressive.
It's 3 years. I remember Pink released an album, a greatest hits album, and I was like, that seems soon.
You're like, relax.
And it's been 20 years.
What do you think you gotta have? You think you gotta have like, I'm almost feeling you gotta have like 25 on it.
I mean, I think 20 years is fine.
Okay.
Like, I think if you've had at least 3 to 5 albums that have produced at least like a few hits each, you could cobble together a greatest hits album for sure.
It's almost like when you look on iTunes and it's like, it says like essentials and you're like, some of these aren't that essential.
But then I think like I was obsessed with the Celine Dion greatest hits and that came out in 2001.
And... Yeah, but I think you were on an island with that, I think.
So in 1972, 6 months after the release of Future Games, the band releases their sixth studio album, Bare Trees. We don't really have anything much to say about that. The band's doing really well in the studio and they're kind of like making some money, but their tours start to become problematic. By 1972, Danny Kirwan has developed an alcohol dependency and was becoming alienated from the rest of the band. Before a concert in August 72, he smashes his Gibson Les Paul custom guitar and refuses to go on stage. The band goes on stage without him, after which Kirwan criticizes their performance and was subsequently fired from the band. They said that the pressure had become too much for him and he suffered a breakdown.
I mean, sometimes you look in the mirror and say, maybe I'm the problem. Right, Fleetwood Mac?
Hi,
I mean, how many guitarists? How many guitars have you lost at this point?
I know. Maybe this isn't really the best.
At this point, like by the time, like, and you're getting close to like Stevie and Lindsay, and it's like this band ends up looking nothing like the original Fleetwood Mac at all. And who is it? Just like Mick Fleetwood?
You know what I was thinking? How you had Mick Fleetwood and then Mick Jagger, and then you have a son named Mick.
Yeah, Mick Charpentier. Yeah.
Was that on purpose? Was that in...
No.
No? No?
Well, it was because he... Birthday coming up. St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, wow. So it's
like an Irish slur. Yeah, it's an insult. I named him an insult.
Wow. What if he had been a few days late? Would it still have mattered? Or
I don't know. That's like a great question. Well, he wasn't. So we just have to go with that because Henry was born during the Hurricane Henry.
Oh, wow.
And he wouldn't have been Henry.
Really? What were you going to name him?
Thomas.
And what happened? You were like, oh, it's a hurricane. Got
to
do it.
I never wanted to name him Henry. A hurricane was coming. I was like, what's the hurricane's name? Henry. Okay, that's better than Thomas. Let's do that. Yeah. It was an audible.
There you go. So following Kirwan's departure, the band recruited slide guitarist Bob Weston and vocalist Dave Walker. They recorded the seventh studio album, Penguin, which was released in January 1973. And after the subsequent tour for Penguin, the band fired Walker because they felt his vocal and performance style did not fit well with the rest of the band. They're playing fast and loose with these members.
Fast and loose.
So the remaining five members carry on, record the band's eighth studio album 6 months later. It was called Mystery to Me, and it received gold certification, but it wasn't really that big of a hit, and personal problems start to emerge. During the tour, Weston, the one who had just been hired, started to have an affair with Fleetwood's wife, Jenny Boyd. These Boyd ladies, I tell you.
These Boyd ladies are nothing but trouble.
Nothing but trouble. Fleetwood finds out 2 weeks into the U.S. tour, is completely devastated, fires Weston. The remaining 26 dates of the tour end up being canceled. In a late night meeting after the show, the band told their sound engineer that the tour was over and Fleetwood Mac was splitting up. So the manager was like, you're not going to do this to me. He was very concerned that it was going to really look bad for him, which it would. Mm-hmm. You know, your band's not following through. So he sends a letter to them that says, I haven't slaved for years to be brought down by the whims of irresponsible musicians, claims he owns the name Fleetwood Mac and has the right to choose the members. He recruits a bunch of musicians from different bands to tour the U.S. under the name The New Fleetwood Mac and perform the rescheduled dates. The members of the band were told that Mick Fleetwood would be joining them to like validate it, but he says he never agreed to that. So the New Fleetwood Mac tour begins on January 1974 and initially was successful. And I was thinking people probably didn't know. They probably had no idea that it was a different band because how would they know? Like
how would they know?
You're not seeing videos of them all the time. There's no MTV. One of the band members said the first concert went down a storm. The promoter was dubious at first, but said the crowd loved them and they were actually really good. They got a lot of successful gigs, but then word got around this was not the real Fleetwood Mac and audiences became hostile. The band was turned away from several gigs. They were facing increasing hostility. More dates were pulled. The keyboard player quit. And at one concert, a bunch of bottles were thrown on the stage and the tour collapses. The band dissolves and the remainder of the tour was canceled. Like even the fake Fleetwood Mac is a fucking mess.
Yeah. What is so good about Mick Fleetwood, though? Like, what is the thing? He's just a really good drummer?
Yeah. I mean, I think he's kind of, it was his baby.
Yeah.
But he didn't do a great job with a lot of stuff. So there ends up being this big lawsuit after about who owns the rights to the name Fleetwood Mac. They ask Warner Brothers, who's their label, and Warner Brothers is like, I have no idea who has the legal rights to this. But then a rock promoter writes to Warner Brothers, convinces them the real Fleetwood Mac was Mick Fleetwood, John McVie, Christine McVie, and Bob Welch. And this didn't end the legal battle, but they were allowed to perform and like record. They didn't settle it for 4 years after that, but they settled it out of court. They reform, and instead of hiring another manager, they decide to become the only major rock band managed by the artists themselves. If ever a band that should not be managing themselves.
Right, no kidding.
It is Fleetwood Mac. You guys are not prepared for this.
So Bob Welch, Sentimental Lady. Have you ever heard that song?
No.
Oh, man. Get it. Take a dive. Take a dive into that. It's like a slow dancer.
I love that. Like you're gonna slow dance in, where were you?
Malta?
Malta.
Lest we forget. Trust me.
They just went to Malta on The Bachelor.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was lovely. So I actually understood when I saw it. I said, wow, to turn down a slow dance in these parts. I know.
Yeah. And for what?
So in September 1974, they signed a new recording contract and released their ninth studio album, Heroes Are Hard to Find. It did decently well, but not as well as the band had hoped. They said they were all really discouraged that it hadn't done better. They were exhausted by writing, singing, touring, moving, negotiating. Like, I wonder why you have released nine albums in 7 years at this point. They said they knew they needed something new and different, but they didn't know what it was. Luckily, around this time, Mick was checking out Sound City Studios in LA, and the house engineer plays him the track Frozen Love from the album Buckingham Nicks. He liked it and was introduced to the guitarist from the band, Lindsey Buckingham, who was at the studio recording demos that day. Fleetwood immediately asked him to join Fleetwood Mac. This guy. Just slow your roll.
Right. And then Buckingham does that thing where it's like, only if you take... It's like that... what is that movie? A League of Their Own? Where it's like, only if Kit can come too. Yeah, I guess so.
So Buckingham says, only if my girlfriend, Stevie Nicks, can be included. A little background on them. Buckingham and Nicks met as high school seniors near Palo Alto, California, in the late 1960s. He was in a psychedelic rock band called Fritz and asked her to join it as a lead singer. They were not romantically involved. The band ended up staying together until the early 1970s, with both of them dating other people the entire time. By the time the two decided to move to LA, the band had broken up and they were a romantic item and playing as a folk rock duo called Buckingham Nicks, releasing an album in late 1973. Despite the fact that there was an iconic photo of them topless, which I unfortunately forgot to look up. I really wanted to see that. Did you see it?
No.
Oh.
I'm going to, though.
Yes, you are. The record flopped and the label dropped them. Stevie started waitressing and cleaning houses. Lindsey had gone on a tour with Don Everly that ended badly, but they didn't stop making music. And it was at this point that they wrote Rhiannon and Landslide. So they took a few days to decide about joining the band. Buckingham was ambivalent, justifiably considering Fleetwood Mac to be a meat grinder that ran through band members. But Stevie basically said to him, you know, we have to sew this relationship back up. We have too much to lose here. We need to put our problems behind us. Maybe we're going to get to a point where we can finally have some money and I won't have to be a fucking waitress. So at this time, that was her quote.
Okay.
At this time, Welch opted to depart for a solo career and Buckingham and Nicks joined the band on New Year's Eve, 1974. In 1975, they released their first album together, the self-titled Fleetwood Mac, the band's 10th studio album. And this was their first real major hit. This is the one it has, Over My Head.
I'm over my head. Oh, but it sure feels nice.
Say You Love Me.
You woo me until the sun comes up. And you say that you love me.
Rhiannon.
And it rings like a bell through the night.
And Landslide.
Till the landslide brought me down.
Yeah, and this is where you hear Fleetwood Mac as we know Fleetwood Mac now. Yeah, that's where it starts to sound
what we know familiar. Them as today. Yes, this is where we start to get into the rumors era, and this is the best part.
Yeah.
So I'm going to kind of break down the different relationships and then the songs that they wrote about them for rumors. So professionally, the band was doing great. Personally, they were a mess. Christine and John were divorcing. Christine had begun dating the lighting director for the tour. Stevie and Lindsay were breaking up. Mick's marriage was falling apart. So Mick had divorced Jenny Boyd in 1974, reconciled with her in 1976, remarried her in 1977, and then later that year began an affair with Stevie Nicks. Which yes. I did not realize that Fleetwood and Nicks had an affair when I was going into this.
Poor McVie is going with the lights guy, who apparently makes loving fun.
Yes.
Right.
Apparently a Rolling Stone cover shoot was what sparked the Fleetwood Nicks affair. They had them all in bed together and they were like cuddling next to each other. And that was what sparked their interest.
Okay.
But, hello. So at the time, the band was in need of a hit album. All of their infighting was causing the tabloids to write about them. Hence the name of the album Rumors. That's where they came up with it. So we're going to start with Christine and John. So Christine and John had been married for about 8 years at this point. And what she had to say about it was, we were very happy for about 3 years. And then the strain of me being in the same band as them started to take its toll. When you're in the same band as somebody, you're seeing them more than 24 hours a day. You start to see an awful lot of the bad side because touring is no easy thing. There's a lot of drinking. John is not the most pleasant of people when he's drunk. I was seeing more Hyde than Jekyll. I broke up with John in the middle of a tour. I'm aware it was rather irresponsible. I had to do it for my sanity. It was either that or me ending up in the lunatic asylum. And they
it's
basically...
interesting. And what's really difficult is her saying that she spent more than 24 hours a day with him.
I knew you were going to say that. When I put that quote in there, I was like, I bet he's going to make a comment about that. So these two couldn't even stand to be in the same room together. So Christine wrote Don't Stop as sort of a can't we all get along number, encouraging the band to let go of the past and look to the future. She said, don't stop was a feeling. It just seemed to be a pleasant revelation to have that yesterday's gone. I guess it was directed more at John, but I'm definitely not a pessimist. John admitted in 2015 that he was actually unaware the song had been written about him. He said that he played it for years and then somebody came up to him and was like, you know that Christine wrote this about you, right? And he was like, oh, like no idea.
That makes a lot of sense. Did you know the other song that she wrote that was must have been hard for him to sing?
You Make Loving Fun?
Yeah.
That was inspired by her affair with the lighting director, Cary Grant. And to avoid flare-up, she told John that the song was about her dog.
And he believed it? This guy believed anything.
I know. I feel like John was like just kind of there.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem like he was really that involved in any of it.
And he doesn't even make love and fun. Like, that's yeah. like that's easy.
No, that was Curry. So then we have the Stevie and Lindsay breakup. According to Fleetwood, when they first joined the band, Lindsay had control. And very slowly, he began to lose control. And he didn't really like that. Now, I read a lot of it and like, he was a real prick. He was abusive. They like would get into physical altercations. That wasn't even just with Stevie. It was with somebody else, too. I remember reading. So like he was kind of an asshole. Very handsome, though.
Handsome. And his name's Lindsay. So that's got to come with some angst.
Yeah. I feel like he should be British. It was really jarring to me, especially because more than half of the band is British.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a strange situation. That must be tough for him where he was like, I'm not going to be in the band unless you bring her along almost as if he's doing her a favor. And then she kind of takes center stage.
Him. Yeah. She eclipses him. She Gwen Stefani's him.
She Gwen Stefani the shit out of everybody yeah. with her like witchy outfits, you know?
I know. But also like that's also probably a big part of the reason why they were even successful to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So like, as they're recording for Rumors, Stevie was like, I think this is done. They were fighting all the time. It wasn't really working out. They did say, though, the big thing for them was they never let any of their issues break up the band, which yes and no. I don't think that breakups broke up the band, but I think the hostility toward each other definitely did.
Yeah, and the band will break up like 13 more times.
Yeah, I know. Lindsay writes, Go Your Own Way. You can go! He says it began as almost a stream of consciousness, intending he used the lyrics as the beginning of a conversation with Nix in order to digest and move forward through their breakup. Stevie found the lyrics, packing up, shacking up's all you want to do, to be like the most offensive. She said he knew it wasn't true. It was just an angry thing he said. Every time those words would come on stage, I wanted to go over there and kill him. And it was pretty funny. I watched a video of them performing this in like the 70s, early 80s, whatever it was. And she was so mad. This whole thing, yeah, like just glaring the entire time. This was their big breakaway from the light rock that they'd kind of been doing. The producer, Ken Kelly, recalled that Lindsay was actually beating up his acoustic guitar as he was playing it and like screaming his lungs out. And the first time he heard it, the producer thought, what the heck is this? Because it sounded so non-musical to him. But obviously it was a banger.
Yeah, obviously.
So then Stevie writes Dreams. Referred to it as a twin song, like chronicling the struggles to untangle their toxic romantic partnership. She said, even though Go Your Own Way was a little angry, it was also honest. So then I wrote Dreams because I'm the chiffon-y chick who believes in fairies and angels, and Lindsay is the hardcore guy. So it comes out differently, but we're essentially saying the same things. He's saying, go ahead and date other men and go live your crappy life. And I'm singing about the rain washing you clean. We're coming at it from opposite angles, but we were really saying the same exact thing.
Yeah. I don't know. Is it me or does she look like Princess Leia?
Stevie Nicks?
Yeah. I'm just like picturing her. And like every time I saw her like going through, you know,
that's
watching videos.
Reference.
Oh, no. Out of nowhere. It's like that's what I picture every single time I see her now. Well, the actress that plays Princess Leia, not so much. I know it's the same person.
But... Carrie Fisher?
Yes. Can you see it?
Maybe.
Okay.
Kind of. I mean, right. I feel like you must have like a specific memory associated with this.
Yeah. Something's doing it to me.
So next, we're going to talk about a song that did not make it onto Rumors, but is very important. And we already talked about it a little bit, but Silver Springs. You could be my Silver Spring. So Silver Springs, Stevie wrote to be on Rumors. And it was very, very important to her. She actually gifted her mom the publishing rights to it and like all of the money that would go along with it. She said her mom would never take money from her. So this was the way that she could give her, like set her up. And then they didn't have the time because you could only have like 20 minutes on each side of the record. So they had to cut something and Silver Springs was like 9 minutes long or something like that. It was just impossible to put on there. But she wrote it about, she was driving through Maryland and they went under a freeway sign that said Silver Springs, and she thought it sounded like a fabulous place to her and that it kind of was symbolic of what it could have been. It seemed like Silver Springs would have been like having a family and being together in that idyllic life. She said she also wanted him to know how angry she was with him and was like, you will listen to me on the radio for the next 20 years of your life and it will bug you. Like, that's kind of what the whole theme was. That was kind of the kicker, though. When they took it off the album, then her mom didn't get any money from it. And that actually ended up in the long run becoming another reason why she left the band, which we will get to in a minute. Rumors, released February 1977, wins Grammy Album of the Year, sells 40 million copies worldwide, bringing them to a complete new level of their fame.
Yeah, it's got like, it's Pet Sounds level influential.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really an incredible thing. And I don't think that you can have an album this great without all the emotion.
Yeah, because they try to replicate it. They talk about this later on some of the later ones that like, it doesn't have the passion. As awful as it was for them, that was what made it. And I mean, we talked about this last week, things that really like stir something inside of you.
Yeah.
That's what this did.
Well, I bring up that album, that Beach Boys album, Pet Sounds, which is like influenced the Beatles, the whole Laurel Canyon thing.
Yep.
But Brian Wilson was in the throes of a schizoaffective disorder. Like, he was having hallucinations, visuals, yeah, and audio. And it's without that. Like, so you listen to some of the songs and you're like, whoa, the layers that he put into this, you had to be, yeah, sort of. He was on a different wavelength.
Well, they say that about Kanye. That's why Kanye, sure, goes through so many breakdowns, because he doesn't like to take his meds because it stifles his creativity.
Sure. And it does.
Yeah. So you got to choose. Do you want to be a functioning human being, or yeah, do you want to like have some good art?
No, I mean, it's like, it's, that's actually, there's something to that though, isn't there?
Yeah, I think. You know? Well, I mean, you have to look at, you know, Picasso didn't cut off his ear because he was mentally sound. You know?
Yeah, Picasso didn't cut off his ear, though. Van Gogh didn't. Yeah. But you're right. I get what you're saying. Yeah. Like Dolly and all that weird stuff that he's painting. I mean, it's just awesome stuff.
I know. So next is Tusk. Lindsay Buckingham basically says, like, I'm not going to do Rumours. They want Rumours followed up. And he said doing a follow up to Rumours would be prostitution, essentially. Like, you're getting paid to just give them what they want. So he comes out with Tusk, which is a 20-track double album that it really only has 3 singles. And it doesn't do very well, which they blame on the fact that a radio station played it ahead of time. So they say, like, people were able to mass record it, but there's a lot of other things. Like, they named it Tusk, first of all, which is not...
Yeah, what's that about?
A sexy name.
No.
And they put a dog on the cover. They said to him, like, are you going to put a sexy picture of Stevie on the cover? Because she's the draw. Yeah. And they were like, no, we're going to put a picture of a dog. There was a lot of egotistical kind of choices.
I wonder if Chrissy McVie was like, I'm sexy too.
I know. But I don't think Chrissy McVie, if you watch her, I actually saw Fleetwood Mac in concert maybe 5 years ago. And she doesn't want to be the center of attention. She doesn't have that like draw. Mm. Even with the drama with, you know, I mean, Don't Stop is not Silver Springs. Like, it's a great song, but it doesn't have the like intensity of it, you know?
Oh,
it's
almost like
she wanted everyone to be copacetic, like, you know, and Stevie did not.
Stevie did not.
She wanted.
Yeah, I guess like you're right. Chrissy McVie doesn't have the same powerful voice, but like, I don't know, the talent's there for
sure.
Oh,
my God. No, I would put her like right with Lindsay in terms of the talent to like drive them to be this successful. So in the middle of recording sessions for Tusk, this is when Stevie is having the affair with Mick. She finds out that Mick actually started having an affair with her good friend, who's also married, Sarah Recor. And they ended up falling in love. She basically just finds out from a phone call from Sarah's husband calling her to say, just so you know, Sarah just moved in with Mick this morning, and I thought you might want to know. Which, to be fair, Mick was married when Stevie started dating him.
Yeah.
And as they say, how you get him is how you lose him.
Well, yeah, but how come Sandoval had to take so much heat?
Well, this is like the original Sandoval. And she said that she was like, I lost Mick, but that wasn't a great relationship. But losing my best friend, that was a huge blow. So that was really hard for her. After this point, this is when she starts dating Don Henley. And she actually ends up getting pregnant by him. But she always kind of maintained that she was never going to be a mom. She knew like that wasn't really her life path.
Also, and she said she spent $1 million on cocaine.
Yeah.
In the 70s. So, exactly. Yeah, I guess in the same sentence, you could say like, maybe I'm not cut out to be a mom.
No, that's not the life that she wanted to live. During the Tusk tour, there's still a lot of tension with Buckingham and Nix. And in one show, he actually tries to trip her on stage and then throws a guitar at her. So they all raced off the stage to like see who could kill him first. And Christine said he was the only man that she's ever slapped in her entire life because she was so furious at him for ruining it. So after the Tusk tour commences, the band's accountants claim that they actually didn't make any money from it, which was kind of insane because this was like after Rumours, like this is one of their biggest tours. Millions of dollars were unaccounted for, but they said it's because cocaine dealers don't usually give receipts. And what they were doing is they were having like caviar and champagne. And if Stevie wanted a grand piano in her hotel room, they would bring in a grand piano. And they were actually sending the empty private jets to go get their drug dealers and bring them back.
Oh my God. This is like that rock star decadence that you, this is like the mythology right here. This is the band, right?
Yeah. Like this kind of is all what based you do. On, like you can do whatever you want. And nobody really accused Mick of stealing the money, but it was a scandal for a while and they ended up firing the tour manager. So someone had to take the fall. So they were like, let's just do that. We are now in the 80s.
I'm sorry. Like I just picture Stevie Nicks doing like line after line of a grand piano in the hotel room with like broken things and be like, where's all the money?
And it was at like Ritz-Carlton too. It wasn't like Holiday Inn. So they all end up doing solo albums during the early 80s. Stevie had like a ton of songs she'd been writing during Tusk. Belladonna, her first solo album, sells over 1 million copies and reaches the US top 40. The two biggest singles, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers with Stop Dragging My Heart Around. Stop dragging my heart around. and Don Henley with Leather and Lace, which I love Leather and Lace.
Lovers forever, face to face.
Okay.
No, it's a great song.
He's an Eagles guy, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not. You're losing me on that.
You don't like the Eagles?
No.
I feel like that could change. That could change. We'll work on that. We'll work on that. So Mick Fleetwood releases an album. Lindsay releases an album. None of them are that popular. So the day that Belladonna, this is the wildest part of the whole thing. Okay. The day that Belladonna goes to number one, Stevie finds out that her best friend Robin was diagnosed with terminal cancer. Shortly after she gets diagnosed with terminal cancer, she becomes pregnant and is determined to have this child. So she stops all of her treatment, knowing that she's going to die, but she wants to bring this child into the world. In October 1982, Robin gives birth to her son Matthew, dies shortly after. Overcome with grief, Stevie decides to move in with Robin's widow, Kim, to help take care of the child. 3 weeks later, on a bunch of drugs, she proposes marriage to Kim. He agrees, to their family's horror. They get married in this wedding 3 months after Stevie's best friend died. And everybody is like, what the fuck is happening? Only like two members of the band come. None of the family comes. On their honeymoon, they hear Little Red Corvette in the car, which inspires Stevie to write Stand Back.
Stand back. Honestly, I would have thought she would have been singing Wind Beneath My Wings, because that's the plot of Beaches. And why is the husband's name, why is she always dating people with woman names? Kim and Aunt Lindsay, this is hard to keep up with.
So I know. And then Robin, which.
Robin's close, but.
Prince actually ends up playing the synthesizer uncredited on Stand Back, just FYI. But so Stevie, they get back from their honeymoon. They're hanging out for a little bit. And then she goes into the nursery with the baby at one point, and the chair is rocking, even though there's nobody in the room. And she realizes Robin is not happy about this. She wouldn't want this. And then after 3 months, they annul the marriage.
Yeah, they're like, when Robin gets upset, she always gets in the rocking chair. That's how you know she's upset.
Can you imagine? She's like, I just thought it was the right thing to do.
I
thought the right
thing. I got the weirdest feeling that Robin wouldn't like this. Does that make sense?
Like, I don't know. I will absolutely. I'm taking notes for if I die. I'm going to come back and haunt whoever it is. All right. 1982, the band's 13th studio album, Mirage, is a return to more conventional approach. Buckingham had been chided by the critics, and like people were really upset with him that Tusk was so far out of the realm of what they'd been doing. So they wanted to make a more accessible record. So they said that Mirage was an attempt to get back into the flow that Rumors had, but we missed a vital ingredient. That was the passion. This is what I was talking about, that like they didn't have that anger. The whole thing, it's an immaculately crafted album, but it comes across as more wistful than bitter, which kind of doesn't really lead to that much popularity. Following Mirage, the band goes on hiatus. During this period, Mick files for bankruptcy, estimating that his cocaine addiction alone spent nearly $8 million and the rest of his money on real estate investments that never paid off. Nick goes to the Betty Ford Clinic for cocaine addiction. John McVie suffers an addiction-related seizure. Mm-hmm. All of these due to the excesses of this lifestyle. And it's rumored that Fleetwood Mac has broken up, but Buckingham says that he's unhappy at allowing Mirage to remain the band's last effort. At this point, Stevie starts dating Joe Walsh, who is also in the Eagles.
Yeah.
Like, she can't just fuck up one band. It's got to be multiple ones. And this one is actually, or he's married to his third wife at the time, but she still considers him to this day to be her great love. It lasted like 3 years. And she says he's the only man that she would have settled down for. And she would have actually had children with and been together.
Buckingham, and Joe Walsh was like, yeah, I'm good.
Joe Walsh is like, this is a lot. Yeah. And that's kind of what it is. So I read, well, I didn't fully read it. I took out Goldust Woman, the Stevie Nicks biography, and I kind of like skimmed through it. They had that great thing in the back where it's like the index. I think it's, is it called the index? Where it's like, you can just, it'll say like Joe Walsh, and then it shows you all the pages that that he's on, which is great for a biography, and especially this, because I could go through and like go through it all. So 1987, Buckingham has started to work on his third solo album when he agrees to produce what would become Tango in the Night. This is the 11th album, I want to say. But this one was really hard to make because Stevie was like in and out of rehab. They said she only came for 3 weeks to record it, and he actually had to piece together the vocal tracks from a patchwork of sources. It's kind of like when I have to go through and edit the podcast and I have to like take your yes from one part and put it in another part to make things make sense. But this one becomes their best selling release since Rumors. This one has Little Lies. Tell me lies, tell me sweet little lies. Everywhere. Which is my favorite. I would say Silver Springs and Everywhere are my favorite. Seven Wonders, which I didn't know that I knew, but I did know it. To see the seven wonders, I'll make a path to the rainbow's end. And Big Love. They make the album. It's a great album. And then Lindsay starts to get reluctant about going on tour. He's like, I can't be in the circus anymore. This is too much. They end up having a group meeting at Christine McVie's house. Results in turmoil. Stevie and Lindsay get into a physical altercation. And that day, Buckingham left the band. When they asked Mick Fleetwood about it later, he said, making Tango in the Night and then falling apart before we could take it on the road is one of those many elements in the Fleetwood Mac story that could only be us, which is so true. Yeah. You made a whole goddamn album and you couldn't even go and tour with it. So they end up releasing another greatest hits album. In 1990, they released their 15th studio album, going to a little more adult contemporary style, but it receives mixed reviews, and they kind of say it's a low point because Lindsey Buckingham is not involved.
Yeah, it's kind of like at a certain point, hang it up.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the 90s too, when like you're getting into grunge, you're getting into rap, and like
no one wants to hear that. No, everyone.
Like, this is like Delilah style.
Although I'll tell you what, though. You know who kind of pulled this off, like a very popular late 60s, early 70s, mid all through the 70s? Aerosmith had a big comeback in the 90s.
Yeah, but Aerosmith was like 80s.
Yeah, they were in the 70s though too.
I know, like Dream On.
Yeah.
And then they had the stuff with like Run DMC though. So they were like still kind of cool.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
You know, that was cool.
I mean, doing weird music videos with your daughter is not cool.
No, they did No, that was weird.
Like, look at my daughter. Isn't she sexy?
But the weirdest part about it is like, didn't she not know she was his daughter for a long time? I don't think that Liv Tyler grew up thinking Steven Tyler was her dad.
Would she think they were friends?
No, like she thought somebody else was her dad. And then when she was a teenager, she found out that Steven Tyler was her dad. And then they did the sexy music videos. That makes it weirder, in my opinion.
It does make it weirder. It does make it weirder. Yeah.
Like, because it's like, oh, we found this relationship. Do you want to be in my music video?
You're sexy.
So in 1992, Fleetwood arranges a 4-CD box set called 25 Years the Chain. A notable inclusion in this box set was Silver Springs. So Stevie had requested to use this track for her 1991 Best of compilation, but Fleetwood refused because he wanted to use it on his collection. And this disagreement was believed to be the main reason why Nyx left the band in the first place, because she was so, like, I was thinking about it and I was like, imagine if you had a great fucking song and you knew it was a great song and they were like, no, we're going to take this off the album. And then you were like, okay, can I use it on my album? And they were like, no. We're gonna use it on ours. I could see how that would be, especially when like it robbed your mom. Thankfully, her mom retained the rights, and when it came around again, they were actually able to like make some money on it. They ended up getting back together, reuniting. Bill Clinton used Don't Stop as his campaign song, and they reunited for his inauguration. And then they end up getting back together for like certain parties, and then they regroup and perform the live concert called The Dance. And that was where they had the Silver Springs video,
which is great.
Yeah. And The Dance actually sells 5 million units, sends them to the top of the charts. And this will be the final appearance of Christine McVie for 16 years. So then we have a little bit of a renaissance in a few different ways. First, May 3rd, 2011, an episode of Glee entitled Rumors features all Fleetwood Mac music, brings him back into the fold. And then there's a viral meme in April 2018.
That yeah, I know, I know.
But no, this isn't the one. This is a different one. This okay. is a cheerleading one. This is in April 2018. And then in October 2020 is when okay. the guy with the cranberry yeah. juice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wait, what song is he? What song is it again?
Dreams. He's doing Dreams. Oh, okay. And that, for the second time, brings it back into the Billboard top 10.
That's one of the most random things
ever. I know. It's like drinking. What is he drinking? Like cran
like
apple?
Ocean spray. Like ocean spray.
It's ocean spray. In 2018, Buckingham gets into a fight with them about a tour and they go back and forth. And then Buckingham gets fired. They disagree about it. Buckingham files a lawsuit, says that they breached an oral contract. They get into a fight about, apparently they accepted an award and he like smirked when Stevie was talking and she didn't like it. So she gave an ultimatum and was like, it's him or me. And so they break up again. And then in November 2022, Christine McVie dies after suffering a short illness. And Mick Fleetwood and Stevie Nicks both come out and say that they don't see any point and they will not reunite due to Christine's death. Which,
yeah, well, I think,
let's be honest, I'll believe yeah. it when I see it.
But backbone of the man, Christine McVie.
Christine McVie, honestly, like Little Lies Everywhere, You Make Loving Fun. Like those are all some of my favorite mm-hmm. Fleetwood Mac songs.
Absolutely.
And I think that's really kind of rare. That's one of the things that's really kind of amazing about Fleetwood Mac is that they had such different styles. I mean, you have Lindsay singing Go Your Own Way, you have Christine singing, and they're all completely different voices.
And great.
And great.
They all could have solo careers.
They all did, and they didn't.
Yeah, I can't. I'm surprised McVie didn't. And I'm surprised. What was like Lindsay Buckingham's solo? Like, did it have? Would I recognize anything?
I don't think so. I mean, granted, I didn't actually listen to a lot of the stuff, but it didn't strike me as anything that I missed out on.
Okay, fair enough.
I know, but I did. I enjoyed going back and like reading through all these.
I enjoyed listening to it. And I wonder if it's going to have the staying power in my car that Milli Vanilli did. Because they had a run.
Are you still going with Milli Vanilli?
Once in a while, I'll throw on Blame It on the Rain.
Yeah. But, it's a banger. Yeah.
It's a banger.
It's no Rumors, but...
I mean, yeah, it's true. It's not. It's still good, though.
Yeah, so that's Fleetwood Mac. What'd you think?
I think you did a fantastic job. I'm glad that we got this out of your system.
I know. That was a wild ride. And there's so much more that like, it was so hard to even, you were like, I listened to a podcast and I watched a documentary. I was like, I can't even do that. There's so much information mm-hmm. just in the base information of it that like, it really was interesting. Did you watch Daisy Jones and the Six?
I did. And I got to be honest with you, it was boring as hell.
The first three episodes I found boring, but once they got together with the band, I really enjoyed it. And Stevie Nicks actually said, watching it, for anyone who doesn't know, Daisy Jones and the Six is loosely based on Fleetwood Mac. And there were a lot of ties that like, I was like, oh my God, I remember that. Mm-hmm. There was one thing where Stevie said when her and Mick were having the affair, at one point they ran off stage and they like kissed backstage and the wife was like on the other side of the curtain or something. And that was actually a scene in Daisy Jones. And Stevie Nicks said that like, it was like revisiting her past. So like, there's definitely...
Yeah,
some legitimacy to it.
That's pretty cool, actually. It makes me want to almost revisit it.
Yeah, I like the music too. The
music's good.
They actually were planning on doing a tour, but COVID or something like prevented it from happening. Yeah. Oh, no. It was, they were going to perform at the Grammys together last year, but the writer's strike stopped it.
I don't get any of that. But all right. Yeah. All right.
All right. So,
anyways, before we get off here, rate and review, please, if you can. Yeah,
please do. Still didn't do it in the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, that's what we got to do.
You're going to get there one day.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll figure it out. As time goes on, we'll figure it out.
All right. And on that note, we will see you next week.
See you next week.
Blue.
Christian.